3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Welcome everyone to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust, and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm Desiree Duncan, Vice President of Health Equity and Inclusion at BPD, and I'll be your host for today. And this episode, we have a couple of guests coming back and joining us. We have Ryan Coliani, Chief Communications Officer, and Evan Harris, Account Director Extraordinaire. And as y'all can remember, he's the true regulator. All right, good to have you both back.
Great to be on. I will promise not to be boring, because that was a stipulation that Des said. So hopefully not too boring here.
Yeah, some of the feedback we've gotten is we're not so sure about this Ryan person that you have on. But we have you both on because of your comms chops, your eye to what's going on in the landscape, and especially given an election year, you know, what's kind of going on in politics, how this election might affect healthcare. As we know, Evan, you wrote a blog around this earlier this year, back in the spring, just kind of sharing some of the things for folks to be paying attention to this year. But given that we are, you know, a few months away from said election and a lot of things have changed, wanted to retouch base with both of you on that. So with that, let's start with that, you know, the state of the presidential race. A lot of things have occurred over these last several weeks here, but just kind of curious your initial thoughts on this and thinking about how this affects the healthcare space.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a different dynamic than it was 6 weeks ago, and we're really in kind of the final stretch here. You know, less than 60 days till election day. I think that, you know, obviously the candidates have changed, but I don't know if a whole lot has changed from both a policy perspective, but also regarding kind of the attention that we can anticipate healthcare receiving during the next couple of weeks as we get closer to early November. This has always been an election, particularly at the presidential level, that is not focused on individual policies. This is a personality-driven election. Which candidate do you personally prefer? And if you remember back to the original debate when President Biden was still in the race, not a whole lot of conversation during that debate around policy, around healthcare policy. That is, I don't anticipate that there'll be a whole lot happening on that topic next Tuesday when Vice President Harris goes up against former President Trump in the debate. So I don't know if a whole lot has changed in the state of the race, but there's certainly massive implications on healthcare that will be anticipated coming from Washington next year, whether that's congressional legislation or from the regulatory realm, where we can anticipate a little bit of a different approach by either administration, depending on who's in office. But from a state of the race perspective, you know, it's still an incredibly tight race. Most polls have Vice President Harris in the lead, but that's when we look at things like popular vote. Obviously, we don't decide elections by popular vote. So on a state-by-state election, it's probably a 60-40, 50-50 coin flip at this point. We'll certainly see how it plays out for the ultimate impact on healthcare in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting what you noted about the not a ton of healthcare policy being on the discussions with this election, and thinking about, like, yeah, there hasn't really been a ton of this since the 2008 and the Affordable Care Act and what have you. But curious, given that a lot of times the presidential elections don't necessarily fall directly on issues that face hospitals, but the state races do. Kind of curious to hear from both of you on what we should be looking out for when it comes to the state races.
Yeah, I can jump in here. I think really what we're going to watch out for is, you know, we have some Senate races, some battleground states. I think there's maybe 10, 13. It depends on what source you pull it from. 11 governors up for re-election. I think only a couple of those are competitive. So, North Carolina, New Hampshire were the ones listed. North Carolina is obviously a big one. They just expanded Medicaid late last year, so that's probably still being rolled out. I look at states like California, right? Passed a lot of healthcare bills late last, 2023. Had to delay some of them. Think of like the healthcare worker minimum wage. That was delayed because of a budget deficit. And some other cuts they made to, I believe it was like public health funding. So there is some realignment in, you know, Ryan's spot on of being a personality driven presidential election. We're not going to really see healthcare featured or focused, or I can't really foresee it moving any needle in the next, sub 60 days till November. Where you might see that though, is at the state level, even maybe the local level. We've talked a bit of things on state ballots, right? All types of different healthcare initiatives. I think one place the presidential will inform is whoever wins, you will see governors either on the opposite side of the aisle or state legislatures, you know, Republican or Democrat, reacting to who becomes president and who's slated to be put in the White House in next year, January. You'll likely see a rush of legislation to counter, you know, think of proposals, you know, a Trump or Kamala would institute in the first 100 days. You'll likely see the opposite or rebuffing of those in state legislatures, depending on who they control. So likely where we're going to see that healthcare impact is more of the state and local level.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Evan. I think the things that we've been tracking, at least from an individual policy perspective at the state level, continues to reinforce the risk that exists for health systems out there at the state legislative level. When you think about states looking at staffing mandate ratios, those types of things that have been implemented in a number of states and been considered in others. When you look, Evan mentioned North Carolina earlier, there was a proposal that was accepted by the health systems in the state to forgive medical debt in exchange for additional Medicare and Medicaid dollars. That just happened in the last couple of weeks. We're seeing an increased conversation around CEO compensation, those types of things. So there is continued pressure at the state level, what we call the value attack, where health systems are not seen as focused on their missions. They are being criticized by policymakers and other stakeholders for being focused on the bottom line. And that's something that is a very challenging narrative to exist when you think about legislative priorities and where things go. I think that ultimately is going to translate at some point to the federal level, whether it's legislation in Congress or when you look at federal regulations that are implemented by new administrations. Price transparency is a great example. That was a proposal that was built and created by the Trump administration and expanded during the Biden administration. So, you know, the healthcare costs are a bipartisan issue. And for hospitals and health systems, we are in the crossfire for being blamed for that. And I think there's a real need to address that narrative if we think we're going to have success or specific pieces of legislation either supported or voted against per our liking.
You know, speaking of that, you know, that feels like something where like state associations may play a big role in that and overall looking at some advocacy. So if that is what we would be potentially up against, like what's some of the advice that we would be giving to clients?
Yeah, I could start here and then maybe Evan, you can jump in. There's a number of associations that we're working with behind the scenes on a couple of things. One, helping address very specific pieces of legislation that they anticipate coming in the next cycle. And how do we kind of seed the ground leading into that to support that potential legislation? We also have a number of state associations that are their members are very frustrated on the performance of Medicare Advantage over the last couple of years and the challenges that has created for reimbursement because of denials from large health plans. And we have a number of associations that are likely going to be out there in market being very critical of how health plans have administered Medicare Advantage plans. So I think a lot of associations have taken kind of the last 9 months or so and really tried to use it as a foundational phase to prepare for what legislation may be coming either at the federal level or at the state level starting in 2025.
Yeah, I'll just add, I think of it from the relationship level. Who do you know that's coming in? Who's termed out at the state level? Is there going to be new health chairs? Will there be a new majority leader in your state legislature? or where you have a larger medical center or hospital, will there be a new county commissioner? I mean, think of all the different, those small changes from mayor to county up to a state representative. Are your relationships in place? Whether that's staff, the chief of staff, whether that's the lawmaker, do you serve on a board or a chamber together? You don't ever want to be in a spot where you're in an emergency or a crisis, or they're asking questions about, you know, maybe it's a service line cut, maybe it's an adjustment, and you don't have that relationship established. You're going to run into some problems there. So I think at the beginning of the year, it's always a nice time to reassess, you know, where our challenges, who are friends, who are allies, and then work accordingly. Just not even about an influence perspective, but just so they know and are educated on, you know, who you are as a system. What are your goals? What's your impact? How do you show up in the community? Just so when it comes to an issue or a bill or something you need to talk to them about, you're not doing that during a time crunch or time you need to be spent working on an issue.
And also thinking about being able to tell that story to your patients and consumers so that they can understand as well. But you had mentioned that word relationship, which is always kind of my favorite topic. So kind of twisting that, Evan, you wrote a blog about the election year and that this is going to be a contentious one. And, you know, one of the topics in there was about the health sects and essentially, you know, just the continuing polarization of various groups. You know, I'm kind of curious, just given that, you know, folks are being more vocal, and I know that hospitals and health systems have been dealing with kind of some upticks and distress over and maybe even some moments of violence over the years. I'm kind of curious, just given that there are these political conversations going on, you know, are they infiltrating the health setting? And if so, how can health systems better prepare themselves? Or if there's stories of lessons learned that we can share?
Yeah, I mean, on one part, you know, violence against healthcare professionals, healthcare workers. Unfortunately, we saw a big uptick since COVID, right? We saw a lot of states pass laws that made it, you know, criminally made it more strict or more of a penalty. I think it was maybe a misdemeanor to a felony if you, God forbid, attacked a nurse or a doctor or someone in a hospital. The political component in polarization and just the nature of political campaigns in general right now, I think for a lot of our systems, it's do you have a plan, a process? Do you have things in place to deal with if there's an issue, if folks are wearing, you know, political campaign shirts or pins, if they're coming into work and there's contentious conversations. And that lasts through the election, and that'll go beyond the election, right? That could go to Inauguration Day. That could go to the first year of the new administration. Whatever it is, whatever issue pops up, you know, it's a big internal communications ask, and that's kind of where the strategy should sit. But I think it's something if health systems and folks are not thinking about it in the healthcare space, they need to be ready because it can impact everyone from a patient seeing something and potentially being offended or not like something to someone telling the media or it even going further. So it unfortunately can spiral. And I think just health systems, you need a plan and a process and to deal with it correctly.
Yeah, I mean, just like Evan talked about, of how health systems and state associations need to be thinking about what the legislative makeup looks like in 2025. There should be significant planning for these types of events now and being very clear in communicating with staff what the expectations are. What are we doing to protect them? What are we going to allow in our workplaces and what we aren't going to allow in our workplaces? What type of speech will be appropriate and what type of you know, additional workwear, whether it's a button or a hat or whatever, is going to be permitted. So I think if you're able to set those expectations early, that's a much better situation to be in than when you have to react to an incident, and then ultimately folks are frustrated that you are taking those steps and feel like you're alienating their political views. We saw a lot of health systems prepare for this both in 2020 as well as in 2022. And certainly would encourage them to do so again this year.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of interesting, just the changing landscape of how society and culture kind of responds to things. And I think about like our experience in the day to day, it's mostly like yard signs, and there's usually some stories about like, oh, removing, you know, someone's signs from their yard or what have you. But it's always kind of interesting to think about that from even just in the healthcare setting. And how some of that is entering that space where, you know, some of these things should not be thought of in those areas. But kind of curious about the, again, kind of continuing the lines of relationships, this ties into that, the coalition building, knowing that a lot of work needs to happen, that the state associations are working on, but curious as to what we're hearing about coalitions and the role that they play in kind of supporting key issues.
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot more of them and a lot more visibility of them in advance of next year, particularly out of the large associations in DC, as well as their large member organizations. So you've probably seen some of the anti-PBM coalitions, some broader hospital-focused ones, very specific on pieces of legislation they're looking for or regulations they're looking to shift. So I think those are incredible assets, particularly if they're well-resourced. And by well-resourced, I mean being able to spend significant dollars on either engaging with constituents, engaging with members, advertising to those individuals, sharing that message of whatever the specific issue they're advocating for. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that. You're seeing a lot of the building happening this year. Again, the foundational piece to set up for the legislative fights that naturally will come in a new Congress and a new state legislature at the state level. So those are incredibly important. And I think it goes back to the value attack piece that we talked about a little bit earlier. I think there's a significant obligation by these groups to really reinforce and shift that narrative, to remind policymakers and to remind their constituents of the mission of hospitals and health systems beyond care settings, but the economic drivers that we are, the community programs that we have, the impact we have on overall well-being in these communities, the economic drivers, as I mentioned. So I think there's some groundwork that needs to be done that are ultimately going to set you up for those legislative fights that those coalitions are going to have. And they can do both. And those that are being intelligent and smart about it are thinking about it that way.
Speaking of attacks, I mean, there's been the growing cybersecurity attacks, and that's a huge concern given the recent change. HC, curious your thoughts on protection, but also just you know, how to navigate the crisis of that.
I mean, it's not an if, it's a when. I mean, these are happening. Evan and I were with Vizient a couple of years ago on this very topic, and it will happen to your organization, whether it's a direct breach or it's through a vendor, or like it was on the change piece, that the change ultimately being the vendor that impacted health systems. So I think it's absolutely essential to prepare. Most of our hospitals and health systems are underprepared in this area. They have the operational plans, but they do not have the reputation and communications plans that are necessary to maintain and support those efforts when something does happen. Just given the sheer size of the organizations that a hospital or a health system naturally interact with, it's going to happen at some point, and it's absolutely essential for health systems to be ready.
Yeah, Des, I'll add real quick. You know, healthcare often the most targeted when it comes to cyber attacks or phishing scams. And I think it's interesting, there were some pieces out of New York, and HHS had these regulations about like, hey, if you're a certain size organization, I think there was a certain implication of hospitals, but like, you need to have a cyber plan, you need to have it on the books with us so we know that you're prepared and ready, whatever that looks like. And it's interesting, like, investment in cyber and IT and all that, like, it is expensive, and these are big systems, and these upgrades and changes, like, they take time. And so these regulations, like, I don't know if they really helped. It was just more work for something that, like, hopefully if you're doing best practices, you have already, but really this absence of any healthcare policies or any platforms, it's like, that is something that I would hope would sit higher of, like, if you actually want to help protect healthcare from cybersecurity incidents, like, give them some resources or do some grant or actually put something behind it instead of just like, hey, you need to have a playbook ready when you get hacked. Like, well, of course, like, everyone's going to have that ready, but, like, often the numbers and the data and the investment for health systems, like, cybersecurity, just for whatever reason, for all the things going on and all the complications with comes to running a hospital and health system, like, it is not that high. And so it's just like, if there was a better partnership or understanding there, I think that would help a lot of these hospitals.
Now, I know we've covered a wide range of topics in this conversation, knowing that we're just kind of giving updates from the year as we're heading into Election Day in about 2 months. But curious, you know, from your top of mind, what are some of the key takeaways that healthcare leaders should be focused on in these coming months?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things, and I'm sure Evan has some ideas as well. I think it's just a natural need to be understanding and preparing for what the next year looks like, whether that's what the next couple of months look like at the election level and how you're going to engage with employees around political speech and those types of things, all the way to understanding what needs to happen to be setting up an environment for success at the legislative level. I think associations and coalitions have a huge role to play in that. But hospitals and health systems directly have a huge role to play in kind of elevating the reputations of their own organizations. And that ultimately is going to lift the reputation of the entire industry. So better telling our story of impact, of our mission, of the exceptional care that we provide, all those things I talked about earlier, is something that absolutely should be a priority, because ultimately it's going to pay political dividends in the longer term. That's probably my big one. Evan, what do you think?
Yeah, Ryan, I think I'm thinking of regulatory. I think there's still quite a few issues that have not come up yet. You know, we've talked previously in our work of, like, the Chevron ruling. What does that mean for federal agencies? And that's basically, if I could summarize it in a sentence and maybe fail miserably, it's basically through a SCOTUS ruling this summer, before courts had to take the agency's position on certain issues or regulations and use that as a standard. And the Chevron ruling basically threw that out. And so there will likely be, and that was related to, like, fisheries. So nothing has come down yet for healthcare, but, like, something like that, that could upend HHS policies, CMS regulations. I mean, think about, it's a little bit of Pandora's box on the regulatory side. There were some merger M&A rulings late last year that the FTC came down with that it might have tightened market concentration. I don't think it's really had an impact on health system mergers. The data is probably going to outpace last year's in terms of the amount and number. But and then think about, you know, we didn't touch on it earlier, but, like, potentially a new president, or if Kamala comes in, like, she might want her people in certain roles. So think about a new HHS director. Obviously, Becerra has, I believe, left or is about to leave. Potentially CMS, potentially FTC, which could change regulatory issues. So, like, I still think, and then think of state AGs, like, I still think there's a lot of regulatory stuff that could happen that systems need to prepare for.
Yeah, I think what Evan's saying there is really important. I think the administration impact and the agency impact is going to be larger than the legislative one, depending on who wins the White House, or even in governor offices, those types of things. FTC is going to be a far more aggressive agency against health system mergers if Vice President Harris is elected. That's a simple fact. So I think you'll see some additional pressure there, but you're going to see each candidate, if they are elected, continue to use the agencies and executive orders and those types of things to potentially impact health policy.
Yeah. And along those lines, thinking about the, I think about these 2 months kind of leading up to it, it's almost a, you know, there are, of course, folks doing boots on the ground work, but it's almost a wait and see. Like, this is kind of a, all right, there's, we can speculate all day long, but it doesn't matter until those numbers come in and we see like what's going to change, what's going to happen, and start to act accordingly. So,
yeah, I think that's spot on, Des. It's, you know, voters are very frustrated with healthcare costs and they are increasingly blaming hospitals for it. And so what we can do now in the interim is going to set up for those potential scenarios that we don't anticipate today.
All right. With that, we'll wrap it up. Ryan, Evan, thanks so much for being here. And for all of you listening, thank you so much for joining in. If there's something you want us to cover on the No Normal Show, shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. Make sure to share the show with friends and colleagues and give us a review and ratings on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. And I've seen where Spotify has added comments, so be sure to join that conversation is there as well. All of that would be greatly appreciated. And until next time, don't ever be satisfied with the normal. Push that no normal, y'all. And we'll talk to you next week. 3